again already, which means it's time for another episode of Talk Central. In fact, it's episode 7, brought to you by the editors at techcentral.co.za. My name is Duncan McLeod, and with me here in the studio is Candace Jones. Hi, Candace.
Hey, Duncan.
So, MTN was all the talk this week, I guess, with their results presentation. Lots of stories and lots of information flowing out of that. Of course, it was their interim results, their six-month results for the period ending June 30, 2010. And what did you make of the numbers, Candace?
Well, pretty solid, actually, and I think a lot more solid than many people expected, specifically from the two big operations, South Africa and Nigeria. Both countries are showing stronger margins, which over the last couple of years have been flagging and looking more promising now than they have for a while.
So, yeah, the South African business seems to have turned the corner. Their market share has gone up from 34 to 36%, if I remember correctly.
Sounds about right, yeah.
Although I was chatting to an analyst last night who said that Vodacom might not be too worried about that. He was suggesting that maybe MTN has picked up most of those customers, sort of the low ARPU, the low spending consumers, to gain that market share, and that Vodacom's actually managed to hang on to the wealthier contract customers.
Well, I think what Vodacom has done well is turned their prepaid customers to contract, and I think that's something that MTN yesterday still said that they're still battling with in South Africa. So yes, it is definitely the lower ARPU segment.
But Tumi Nhleko, the Group C president and CEO, the outgoing Group president and CEO, did seem not entirely happy with the 2% improvement, 2 percentage point improvement in market share. I think the quote, or what he said during the presentation was, "I would have preferred 2 percentage points more than that." I don't think they're entirely happy yet with the turnaround at the South African operation. But clearly, it is on track under the new CEO, Coral Pino. Of course, has been at MTN since basically it started back in 1993-94.
Well, since he's taken over, there seems to be a new vigor in the South African operation, and then that's good news.
That definitely seems to be the case. Yeah, yeah. In fact, even some suggestions that heard some suggestions after the presentation yesterday that Coral Pienaar could be in the running to take over from Phuthuma next year.
Well, I don't see it as a bad choice. I think he's quite a solid option and a very very solid businessman.
I have a feeling he might be quite close to retirement age, though, so that may be an issue.
It's something that I heard last year as well, so it's possible, but yeah. We'll see.
Someone said to me he's around 63 or 64 years old. He certainly doesn't look it. if there isn't a mandatory retirement age at MTN, if he's interested in the job, then I'd say Coral Pienaar is probably one of the front runners for the position.
That's very possible.
The really big news for me, actually, that came out of the MTN presentation yesterday wasn't so much what was said in the auditorium, but actually a conversation, Candace, that you and I had afterwards over coffee with the chief technology officer of the South African operation, Samir, and I think his name is pronounced Dava. It's spelled Dave, D-A-V-E, but I think it's pronounced Dava. He's from Malaysia, isn't he?
Yes.
He heads up the technology operations for the South African business. And we were having an interesting conversation. In fact, I was just asking him about his views on Cell C and their rebranding and the fact that they're going to be using 900 megahertz to launch a FOSS 3G network, and was asking his views on that. And he actually raised an interesting point, which hadn't been reported before. I hadn't heard of it before. MTN's plan to roll out its own 3G network at 900 megahertz and to go aggressively into the rural, more outlying areas of South Africa to provide wireless broadband services for the first time.
Well, I think it's a fantastic move and a very good idea by MTN. It does feel a little bit like catch up to what Cell C's plans are and possibly a possible reaction to Cell C. But regardless, those areas are very underserviced and underutilized for the operators for margins.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, The operators have taken voice telephony out there, but in terms of broadband connectivity, it's virtually non-existent. I mean, Telkom was given a monopoly to roll out lines into many of these areas back in the 1990s, and while it did some work, it certainly didn't extend the sort of capacity that you'd need to provide broadband services. A lot of it was done over using DECT technology, fixed wireless systems, which really are not suited at all to providing wireless broadband. But if you're going to develop or put an HSPA plus 21 megabit per second network out into the rural areas at 900 megahertz, That could have a big impact, particularly if there's more than one operator that's going to be doing it.
Absolutely. And the thing that really made an interesting point from Samir was that they will be using microwave technology for backhaul so that they can replace the long-distance fiber as opposed to a cheaper option using microwave technology.
Yeah. In fact, he made the point that South Africa's got such vast geography and it's so far to get to some of these places. I mean, to build a tower in somewhere like Kuruman, for example, you're going to have to run 500 kilometers of fiber just to get to the town. So it's not actually feasible to provide fiber to all of these towers. The other problem, of course, is a microwave also has problems because you've got to have line of sight. So you're going to have to put up multiple towers to reach some of these outlying areas. So he has indicated that what MTN is going to do is going to build the towers in rural areas adjacent to the cities first, because it's easier to reach them through backhaul. So hopefully a lot of that will come via fiber as well, as part of the... it's a lot of work and it's going to take a period of years, and MTN is only just now embarking on building a national backhaul network. They're still building the main trunking networks between Johannesburg and Durban and Johannesburg and Cape Town. So it will take time, but it's really cool.
Don't discount him too soon. Samir has, when he first started at MTN, rolled out several hundred 3G towers for MTN in quick succession.
Yeah, he's done some interesting work since he joined the company, and he talks a big game. So let's watch the space. You can be sure that Peter Ace over at Vodacom is also going to be watching this with some interest. Vodacom, of course, has also been piloting 3G at 900 megahertz, but not doing it on any sort of scale. I think they've tested two or three towers out in the middle of nowhere just to see if they could get the technology to work and play around with it a bit. MTN has concluded its tests. It used 30 base stations in the Limpopo province and has concluded that those tests were very successful indeed. And in fact, at 900 megahertz, provided 30% greater coverage around base stations than 3G at the traditional 2100 megahertz. He did indicate that they're going to be doing this rollout on a staged basis, so they're going to concentrate on one region, then move to the next region, then move to the next region, which is probably the right way to do it, rather than doing it on a piecemeal basis, rather than trying to do it in one big go, which would also prove incredibly expensive.
Absolutely. I think they also have to do the market research in each given area, specifically because they're so outlying. You've got to check population figures and you've got to check handset availability in those areas. What are people using to access the internet? So, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, the other big challenge is obviously to get the devices out there, and perhaps those devices don't even exist yet. Vodacom's been doing some interesting work with this Linkbook device and some of these cheaper smartphones. In fact, I think they announced this week they're selling a smartphone for under 1,000 rand. Forget the exact amount. I mean, it's obviously a very basic device that you and I wouldn't want to use, but in terms of getting email and basic web browsing out there for very low prices, and those are the sort of solutions we need to get out into the mass market and potentially. The thing that really interested me was that Samir said that MTN actually regards the rural areas, the rural masses, as the next big growth area for data. The general perception is that data is something that's used in the cities by relatively well-to-do people on laptop computers. MTN's view is that this is going to the mass market in the next few years.
Well, that's the game-changing attitude that we need in the country to get internet to everybody.
It's very exciting indeed, and I'm very glad the commercial operators are doing this. And as Dominic Cull, the regulatory expert, commented in the article that appeared on Tech Central this week, hopefully this means that Centec isn't going to have to do it now, because we all know what that would result in. Anything else that came out of this week's MTN presentation? I thought I interviewed Patuma Kleko this morning and had some interesting discussions with him about Barty, the company that they almost merged with, I think it was earlier this year. Some of the analysts have suggested this week that MTN could be facing a big challenge from Barty after it acquired Zain's African assets, Zain being one of the biggest Pan-African cell phone operators and a big competitor to MTN. Now, Barty is an Indian company that's well known for its low-cost model, the way it's come to market. Dirt cheap calls in India, I think we're talking single figures US cents per minute, really, really cheap telephony, and they've managed to go in there using a very low cost model, and the analysts have expressed concern that that Bharti is going to do the same in Africa through its Zain acquisition. In fact, Bharti or Zain has already slashed prices in Kenya, where it's taking on the incumbent operator Safaricom. So it's going to be really interesting to see what they do, particularly in the Nigerian market. I think that's where the analyst's big worry is, because that's Nigeria is MTN's biggest market and by far its most profitable market. And if Bharti Airtel goes in there and chooses to fight and picks a price war with MTN, it'll be interesting to see what the reaction is. But Fatuma had some very strong views in our meeting this morning, in which he said that the analysts have really got this wrong, and that it's not easy to simply take a model that works in India and replicate it in a range of markets across Africa. He suggested that that's an oversimplification of the issue. In fact, he used some even harsher language than that. It's going to be interesting. I mean, the analysts are also kind of the view that there's a big boxing match coming between Bharti and MTN. What have you been hearing on this, Candice?
Well, after yesterday's presentation, there was also a statement made by Fatuma during the presentation to address the specific question from the analyst, where he said, you know, any competitor that goes into the Nigerian market specifically and decides to slash prices must beware, because the Nigerian market is actually a very elastic market. Churn is exceptionally high there. It's possibly, I think it's one of the highest churn, mobile churn rates on the continent. So what happens is that you slash the prices, the whole boatload of Nigerian mobile users will switch to your network, at which point you have to actually have the capacity to handle them. And he's right. I don't actually know what Zain's network is like in Nigeria, but the capacity bringing on hundreds of thousands of subscribers just to deal with one price cut, it's not always a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Another operator which has been having a few difficulties this week is Cell C, and having a few challenges, let's put it that way, around their new branding and their new logo, which the C of which resembles the copyright symbol. What's been happening there, Candice?
Well, it appears that the trademark that the company applied for, specifically, well, several trademarks, with the Cell C as a copyright symbol, it applied for it in December 2009, and it has been provisionally rejected. Much of the media has made hype of this, making the assumption that it's been that they can't use it, that it's no longer viable because it's been provisionally rejected. But from what I understand, it's actually quite a regular practice. From what I understand, there's quite a few companies running around South Africa using trademarks that are. That haven't yet been approved by the trademarks offices.
Mm-hmm. Of course, companies. I think a lot of people don't understand that you don't have to register a trademark to use a particular logo. Obviously, a trademark holder can enforce their trademark if you produce a trademark which is similar to theirs, and particularly if you're in the same industry as them. But you're actually not required to register your trademark. It's a smart thing to do, and the vast majority of companies do register their trademarks. But the fact is, even if this trademark application is rejected finally by the Registrar of Trademarks, Cell C can continue using it. We spoke to a trademarks lawyer this week, one of the country's top intellectual property lawyers, Don McRobert from Edward Nathan Sonnenberg's, and his view of the situation was that Cell C can continue to suggest that this is their trademark. They can continue to use the logo with the TM branding, which means that the application has been filed for the trademark, and there's a reasonable chance that the trademark application will in fact be successful once the issue is argued by its lawyers over here at hearings with the Registrar of Trademarks. So it's possible that it's still going to be registered. In fact, that it may have just been provisionally rejected initially. As a precaution, because of the fact that it has the copyright symbol in it.
Well, it's true, and but there are other alternatives, and I don't think that that Cell C will be worse off if it's rejected entirely. I mean, it can still use its new branding, it can still use its new logo. It just can't enforce the trademark.
I do think, and Don made this point. I do think that the management at Cell C would have been a little shocked, a little surprised. when they were told that their trademark application had been provisionally rejected. It's going to be an interesting one to watch, and it's going to take some time. Registering a trademark in South Africa takes a heck of a long time. I think it takes at least 2 or 3 years before the whole process goes through. The other big story before we go and pay the bills is around digital migration. In fact, Candace, I've just come back from Pretoria, where there was a press conference with the Minister of Communications, Apiwe Nyanda, where he announced the new committee, or the new members of the Council of the Digital Dzonga, which is the advisory council, which has been set up to advise government, and specifically the Ministry of Communications, on digital migration, the move from analog to digital terrestrial television. At the presentation this morning, there was some basic speeches made, and the real big elephant in the room no one mentioned, which was the whole issue of the European versus the Japanese / Brazilian standards, which has caused huge consternation in the industry. There's some well-known names on the list. Karin Willenberg from Mnet, who has spoken out very strongly against government revisiting the whole standards debate, is one of the members of the council, and some other well-known names from industry, including Llewellyn Jones, who used to be the CEO of Plessy, if I'm not mistaken, as well as Julia Hope and Richard Poulton, amongst a few others, including the acting CEO of Sentech, Dingaan Dube.
Llewellyn Jones was also the CEO of CETA.
Oh, he was indeed, of course, yes. Yes, he was. I think it was Plessy, back in the day. But you're right, he was briefly at CETA. He wasn't there very long, was he?
Well, he wasn't, and I think he left in a little bit of a huff, to be honest.
Yes. Yes, anyway, he's back for more punishment, I think.
Good to see Karin on the board, though. The question that it does raise, seeing Karin's name there, is specifically given her vehement stance against the Japanese standard ISDB. One wonders whether or not General Nyanda has changed his mind about whether or not to change or review the standard.
Yes. As you know, Candace, this whole issue was debated by the SADC ministers in Lesotho about 2 months ago, which resulted in the appointment of a task team to go and reinvestigate the whole issue. This task team has apparently now reported back. But the communications ministers from the SADC region now need to meet, and Nyanda says this will happen in quote marks soon, to discuss the findings of the task team, and only then will an announcement be made about what decisions have been taken. He did indicate at the press conference this morning, though, if the South African government decides to switch away from its commitment to the European standard to instead support the Japanese-Brazilian standard, then the whole digital migration process is probably going to be delayed. Cabinet had originally set, I think back in 2007, had set a date of November 2011 for the so-called period of dual illumination, where both analog and digital broadcasts coexist on the airwaves, to conclude. So that, in other words, the analog broadcasts will be switched off in November 2011, freeing up the so-called digital, what is it called?
The digital dividend.
The digital dividend spectrum, thanks, which can then be used by telecommunications operators to provide wireless broadband services. But there's absolutely no clarity or information right now about which way SADC has gone or will go. And
trouble is, Duncan, that even if we stick, if South Africa sticks with DVB, there is no way that the broadcasters can switch off dual illumination by 2011. Absolutely no way. We still have to get set-top boxes manufactured and out into the market to 7 million households.
Yes, indeed. What worries me is that there's been talk this week that the Brazilians have been talking to Sentech, and that Sentech may be setting up a test network based on the ISDBT, which is the which is the Brazilian standard, the ISDBT-TB standard, which is the Brazilian version of the Japanese standard. So there's been this rumor and talk that we may be going to be doing an ISDBT, or a Brazilian, let me just use the term Brazilian standard pilot, on the Sentech network, which I think is quite worrying.
Well, I actually saw reports of this come out of Brazil, I think last week, from several journalists who went over there, courtesy of the Brazilian embassy, shown around the various channels and the technology. And there were rumors then even that they would be setting up a test network with Sentech.
Just for the record, Tech Central was invited on that trip, all expenses paid trip to Brazil, and we decided that it probably wouldn't be wise of us to go, so we didn't attend that event. Candace, I think we should probably take a quick ad break. We'll be back with you right after this.
Welcome aboard Voxair Teleconferencing, where you can enjoy first-class service at a fraction of the cost, without the wait or the jet lag. Just an automated, hassle-free way to connect with people wherever they are, and all the legroom you need. It's like being there without the hassle of getting there. So why travel for business when you can simply teleconference? Call 01-0001-0001 or visit voxair.co.za. Voxair Teleconferencing from Vox.
Welcome back to Talk Central. Well, let's wrap it up with these last two stories, Candace. The Super 5 Media, which we've been running several stories on in recent weeks regarding their slow and it appears now collapse, slow decline and now collapse. You ascertained this week that, in fact, they'd written a letter to ICASA. Tell us about that.
Well, I spoke to ICASA this week, desperately trying to find somebody to speak to at Super 5 Media and hoping that maybe they'd contacted ICASA, and it appears that they have. The regulator received a letter from them, I think, 2 weeks ago, which says that they're still alive, they're still running, and they will communicate whatever management, employee, and business structure changes they have as per the EC Act. So we shall see whether or not they're still going, but that's what they're communicating to the regulator.
Interesting. They've got until September to launch a service, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Okay. Well, Philip Schauer, who's the controlling shareholder in Super 5 Media now, is an interesting character. So let's see if he comes up with something, given the fact that the entire company's staff complement has been laid off. They still exist. They still have a license. Who knows?
Be interesting to see. But more interesting is it appears that Vodacom and their troubled DRC business seem to be coming to some sort of conclusion.
Yeah, finally, it seems that some sort of sanity is prevailing there. As you know, the shareholders in Vodacom DRC, Vodacom and Congolese Wireless Network, CWN, have been fighting for the longest time over the management of the company, with CWN accusing Vodacom of taking money out of the DRC instead of reinvesting it in the business. And the whole issue has gone to arbitration in Brussels. I learned that a couple of weeks ago, Peter Ace, the group CEO of Vodacom, traveled to Kinshasa for a board meeting, or to meet with the shareholders and to get an update on what's happening at the business, and had a meeting with Joseph Kabila, the president of the DRC. Following that meeting, both Peter Ace and the representatives of CWN were called into a meeting with the president and asked to sort out their differences. This resulted in fairly benign board meeting in Johannesburg a couple of weeks later, in fact, late last week, at which the two parties have apparently agreed to work together to prevent the company from sliding operationally, to ensure that it's properly run, basically, and that it doesn't lose market share because of the infighting to rival operators in the DRC. So Peter A. sounded fairly confident that the basis has been set now for further discussions and further negotiations between the parties, which apparently the next meeting is apparently going to happen quite soon. So it sounds like there is at least some progress. The two parties are finally talking to each other. Whether the matter will still have to go to arbitration in Brussels is still up in the air. Certainly the arbitration proceedings haven't been withdrawn, so they're still on the table. But hopefully they're going to be able to resolve their differences.
Duncan, how important is this operation exactly for Vodacom?
In terms of profitability, it's not important at all. It contributes a tiny fraction of Vodacom's profitability, but the market of the DRC is strategically important because it's such a big country. It's got a bigger population than South Africa, and so there's the potential there for it to become a really big market for Vodacom. The trouble is that the DRC economy is broken. It's been shattered by years of war. A tentative recovery that was going on has basically collapsed after the copper price fell. It's a big copper producing economy, and if the DRC were able to get itself right, it would be a wonderful place for South African businesses like Vodacom to go in and really build up a powerful operation. But you know, the economy there is, I think in the world you've got developed economies, developing economies, and then the DRC, which is just purely undeveloped. There's really nothing there. But it's a big market with a lot of people, so there's potential. So if Vodacom were to walk out of that market, they'd be giving up on potentially a very lucrative position. But there's also the chance that that market is just going to remain undeveloped for decades to come.
Well, Frost and Sullivan, telecoms analyst Sipiwe Chereka, has also, you know, got that opinion, and she's very hopeful that that the DRC will actually stabilize and become a powerhouse operation for Vodacom. She reckons they'll stick it out for as long as possible, but if things become ridiculously impossible, then I reckon Vodacom will pull out.
Good. I think let's call it there. Thanks for listening. As always, info@techcentral.co.za if you have any feedback on the show. And hope you have a great week. From myself and Candice, cheers for now.